The Michael Brown Show on Talk Radio 630 KHOW.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and welcome to the Michael Brown Show. Glad to have you with me as we've promoted all last week and during the weekend. We are going to be interviewing the candidates running for governor. The nut jobs who have decided to run for governor, we're going to interview all of them and find out what is going on in their heads and why they want to do it. Just to give you a quick update, here's what we're doing. Today we've got Greg Brophy, and Senator Brophy is in the studio. We'll have Mike Kopp here at 5 o'clock. Tomorrow, Secretary of State Scott Gessler will be here at 4 o'clock. Former Congressman Tom Tancred will be at 5 o'clock on Wednesday. Let's see, Wednesday I got Bob Beaupre at 5, and Thursday we got Steve House at 5 o'clock. So welcome to 630 KHOW, the Michael Brown Show, Greg Brophy.
Good to be with you.
Well, we'll see if that's still true after when we get to, 4:50, 8:50.
There we go.
So I feel obligated to do this, so just kind of go with the flow. There are people that know you, and then there are people that really know you, and there's some people that just know the name Greg Brophy. Give me a, and I'm not asking why you're running, but give me a, who are you?
You know, I'm a farmer and a citizen legislator from Ray, Colorado. I'm a husband to Angela. We've been married 24 years almost, and we have three wonderful kids. I'm an avid cyclist. I love to ride my bike. It's one of my biggest passions. I like to ride all over Colorado. I don't play golf at all. I will shoot guns every chance I get, especially out at the farm. You know, we live on a, we live in Ray, but I farm. And so when you go to the farm, there's always an opportunity to, you know, shoot your handgun or your AR a little bit.
Yeah.
I've been growing watermelon since I was like 9 years old, 4 or 5 acres now, and sell them to local grocery stores. Went to college at CSU, have a degree in animal sciences, and spent part of my life managing really big farms for absentee owners. And I've been farming our own home place since 1992, fourth generation family farmer.
How is it being in a farm? How is it being a farmer in this economy?
Well, up until just recently, we've been just hitting it out of the park almost every year with high commodity prices. But what's happened is, and this always happens in commodity cycles, the price is coming down now, and all of our inputs went up over the last 4 or 5 years. So we have a new level of a cost of production that's way above where it was 10 years ago. And so this coming summer is going to be a little bit more challenging to make money. But I had my best year ever last year, which is partly why I can afford to run for governor.
I have my theory about why some of your inputs, the cost of those inputs, the cost of your overhead has gone up. Why do you think some of the costs of your inputs have gone up?
Well, it's a combination of things, in no small part because they can raise prices. When commodity prices are high, all of the people that sell things to farmers know that we can afford to pay more for them. So fertilizer, which should be a lot cheaper than it is right now, because the main component in nitrogen fertilizer is natural gas. Natural gas is at a you know, fairly low price level right now.
Right.
But the price of fertilizer is 3 or 4 times where it should be relative to this type of natural gas prices. But then, like everybody else, all of the expenses of the businesses that serve us are going up too. Health insurance expenses going up, personnel expenses going up. Fuel is a huge component. Then we have renewable energy mandates that are starting to hit our electrical bills. And that's driving those costs up. And to be sure, the big companies that make herbicides and insecticides, the pesticides, they have components related to transportation that go up and regulatory components that go up. But part of it's because they know when corn is worth $6, $7, $8 a bushel, they can charge us more for, things that keep it safe from weeds or insects.
As I listened to you, you didn't specifically say the words, but I assume you would agree that some of the costs that you're seeing increase are because of government action and government regulation.
In part, of course. Although
energy
is a huge one. Anything that affects the price of fuel or the price of electricity, we feel it immediately. And we can't pass costs on as commodity producers. We just have to eat those costs and hope that commodity prices around the world raise high enough or our productivity goes up to make up for the increased expenses.
Now, I've seen windmills on farms since I was old enough to remember what a farm and a windmill was, and that seems to be the energy source du jour today. You got any windmills on your farm?
Not on our farm. Well, we have a water windmill on the farm, of course, and those things are wonderful until the wind doesn't blow, and then you got to figure out how to get water to your cows.
The reason I ask the question is one of the things that the legislature has done is has basically said to Xcel and some of these other companies that a certain percentage of your power supply has to come from these renewable sources. Do you agree with that idea, with that philosophy, or that legislation?
No, I vote against that stuff almost all of the time. Prefer to have the market determine what type of electricity we're using. You know, if you want to buy wind energy, you can do that. You've been able to do that way before the mandates came in. And wind energy is marginally affordable at certain levels of production right now, especially if you pair it up with gas or water so that it's reliable.
But you get that the government regulation and things like these bills that mandate those things do drive up the price of some of these inputs that you have as a farmer.
Oh, without question. We think that the renewable energy mandate that passed last year, 252, is going to drive up the cost of electricity by 10 to 12%. Now, each one of those center pivots that you fly over when you fly over my home, almost every one of those has an associated power bill of about $15,000 a year. Mm-hmm. So imagine the cost, you know, another 10 or 15% on top of $15,000 is $1,500 to $1,800 right out of the farmer's pocket for each one of those center pivot sprinklers. The average family farm has, you know, 6 to 10 of those things. So it takes $10,000 to $15,000 right out of the pockets of average family farmers, and they don't have anyone to pass that cost on to. And that's no small part of why I'm running for governor.
Well, which leads into my next question. I've always been fascinated by what happens in an individual's, a human being's brain that says there's some point where they say, I'm going to run for dog catcher or whatever it is. And something happened to your brain. There was some defining moment where you said to your wife and family, I'm going to run for governor. What was that?
You know, it was last spring, and it was that extreme legislative session, the gun control bills, the renewable energy bill, and I'm looking around. We're in the fight all the time. And no one is doing better than me at making the points. It was all hands on deck. We were all fighting. But I was the one making the points most effectively most of the time, getting most of the time on the radio and on TV. And I look around and I don't see, we don't have a very deep bench of Republicans here in Colorado. You know, we got Cory Gardner and Scott Tipton, and we don't have a lot of people that can run for these higher offices ready to go. I feel like I'm almost a double-A player trying to jump to the majors here, and we just don't have a lot of triple-A players. I look around, I don't see anybody else who has the tools to actually govern and, more importantly, win the race, and I knew I had to run.
Right. So that and that's one of my specific questions is, what makes you think that you can win? And I don't want to hear what a great guy you are and that you ride a bike and you drive a Prius and all of that campaign garbage that I hear from everybody about everything. I want to know specifically why Greg Brophy thinks he can win, one, the primary, and two, the general.
All right, I'm going to win the primary by putting together a coalition of rural people, gun guys, and people who are tired of losing. Because we've been losing races in Colorado for a decade. On these important statewide races like governor or U.S. Senate. People are tired of running folks who can't win. And so those people are going to vote for me.
Why do you think they can't win? Why do you think the people that we've had in the past can't win? And I'll just, to save you some time, let's set aside a Dan Mays, because that was just a fiasco. But why generally can Republicans not win?
Well, clearly we're not running someone who can appeal to the unaffiliated voters in Colorado, has some sort of cross-cultural appeal beyond just speaking to Republicans. And I can hold the Republican base together without any trouble because I'm pro-life, I'm pro-gun, I'm for low taxes and less government, less regulation, of course. But you also have to be able to appeal to the middle of Colorado. I think experience does that. I think part of it is those intangibles that you don't want to hear about, though. I really do think that the gun-toting, bicycle-riding, Prius-driving farmer has cross-cultural appeal. And then the experience of working on these things that matter to those unaffiliated voters. Education is so critically important. I'm the only one running for governor who actually understands education across the whole state of Colorado. Yeah, choice and competition is important. All Republicans support that, I think, who are running for governor. That fits the front range really, really well. Tell me what good choice and competition does you in Kit Carson, Colorado, where your K-12 school has 130 kids, period. The next closest school is 30 miles away. I'm the only person running for governor who's actually been there and understands that and what's important to those schools, too.
So if education is one of those crossover issues that you can bring a coalition together, more money?
it's not about more money, but it is about keeping our promises to them relative to what they thought they would have. I want my superintendents not to be worrying about balancing their budget because of this negative factor. So I want to do away with that and bring their funding back up to a level that's achievable from both our standpoint at the state level and their standpoint at the superintendent and CEO or CFO level in the school. So I don't want them worried all of the time about how to balance the budget. I want them instead working on teacher effectiveness. I want them working on hiring the best teachers they can find. I want them working on engaging parents in the school district. That's what.
Well, why does that mean? Here's what I've. There's that horrible sound I hate because that means we got to take a break. When we get back, though, and I want to stay focused for just a second on education and funding because I have a generic question about why does it always go to money? Why? And I get that money drives a lot of stuff, but why can't we take whatever we're spending today and find ways to spend it more efficiently? You're listening to the Michael Brown Show. In studio with me, Senator Greg Brophy, one of the candidates for governor. Hang on, folks. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to the Michael Brown Show. You know, this week we're doing the gubernatorial candidates. Greg Brophy, I don't know why, he signed up to be the first one. You're just crazy.
I know.
So I'm going to go back to education for a second, because while I'm a strong supporter of education, Tamara was an educator for 30-plus years before she retired, I always hear education doesn't have enough money, or we need more education. And I think I could go into some schools that are struggling, maybe not the poorest of the poor schools, but some of these larger school districts, and I could figure out a way with a reduced amount of revenue to actually take the money they have and be more efficient and effective in how I spend the money to actually teach kids in the classroom. Are you a candidate that says we have to keep increasing funding for education, or is there a better way to do it?
Well, the answer is both. I think we need to bring them back to the level that they were at when Governor Hickenlooper came into office. Not a lot more than that. I mean, under his tenure, we've actually reduced spending on K-12 education by 2% while growing entitlements by 67%.
And that 2% was what, about $1 billion?
No. $76 million is all. We're not talking about tremendous amount of money. Now, and then you adjust for inflation and population growth. I think we're up to 830,000 kids in K-12 right now. So, and that's up from probably 800,000 when he came into office 3 years ago. So we just need to keep them on a level playing field. And then we need to turn them loose and let them run their schools without us telling them how to do it. We need to kick Common Core out of Colorado, and we don't need to replace it with a Denver-based Common Core. You know what's beautiful about charter schools is that they're run by the parents and the school for the benefit of the kids. To me, that's how you get the best out of everybody. It's like the free market argument. A whole bunch of individuals acting in their own self-interest is better than central planners. We've been doing it the central planning way in education for too long from the state of Colorado, now with Common Core. Let's do this different. Let's give them an adequate amount of money, not a whole bunch more than they have now, just an adequate amount of money, and then turn them loose and say, you guys go run your school the way that benefits you, your kids, your community. And I'll just watch over your shoulder from the state capitol and come in and help you if you're not up to standard.
Okay, so let's say you get elected governor and you want to implement that philosophy. And let's say you have a divide. Hell's bells, no. Let's just say you have a Republican Senate and a Republican House. How do you practically go about doing that? Because isn't there an inherent, almost institutional desire by state government to tell the local school districts how and what to spend the money on?
Well, of course there is. But if you have a governor leading the way instead of hiding under his desk, you can actually get this stuff done. And you go to the Republicans and say, don't you guys believe in the free market? Don't you believe that millions of individuals acting in their own self-interest give us the best possible outcome?
Well, I think they do, but I'm not convinced that all Republicans believe that.
You know, when you run for office, you get asked all of these questions and you really have to, if you have to earn your seat, unlike John Hickenlooper, who was coronated 3 years ago,
right,
you really have to think about what it is you believe and why you believe
right
it. So every
right
every Republican running for office claims to believe in the power of the free market. Now I'm just going to test them and see if that's true.
Okay.
And I think we will.
So if you get elected then, what do you do? And I know this is way in the weeds, but what do you do in terms of the Department of Education and any existing statutory restrictions that prevent state and local governments from doing, I mean, that prevent the local school boards from doing what they believe is the most effective and efficient way for them to spend the money that you guys send to them?
We'll have to change some statute, which is easy to do. You just get it done. And then you empower these local people to do this. And I want to take a lot of these paper pushers at CDE that have been compiling all the reports sent in that no one ever looks at, and I want to replace those positions with teacher effectiveness trainers who can be parachuted, figuratively speaking, into school districts that are underperforming to teach those teachers how to be more effective and to teach the administration in those districts how to be more effective at that. That's really how we do this. This isn't that hard. Think about how and why charter schools are so much more successful. And it's because everybody that's there is bought into it because they know they control what's going on there. If you don't control it, you don't care about it. Right. Nobody washes a rental car.
Right. But I can apply that same theory to the legislature. The legislature does not want to let go of that because they have now lost control. And all you're doing is you're just being a pass-through of the money. I guess I'm really trying to nail you down about how do you truly return effective local control to local school boards.
If you're the governor, you lead the legislature to do that. Say, this is what you're going to do. And if you don't do this, we're going to have all kinds of problems with everything else that you want to do.
Do you think most local school boards really do want control, or do they find it just easier to sit back and take the money and do what you guys tell them to do?
A little bit of both, I'm sure. It's in human nature. But if you give people the opportunity to take charge of what it is that they're supposed to be in charge of, you'd be surprised how much better they perform.
You mentioned Common Core. Tell me what you know about Common Core.
Just that it's centralized planning from the federal government trying to collect a bunch of data, and which some data collection, of course, is important, but then pass down a set of standards from the federal level through all of the schools. It's basically central planning. It's Obamacare over education.
Do you believe in nullification?
Yes.
Would you be willing to nullify some federal laws that, or argue to your state legislature that we ought to nullify, and I don't care whether you name one or not name one, but would you be willing to go so far as to take that step?
Yes. I think we need to. It's time. Washington, D.C. is broke. It doesn't even function anymore, and they have a $17.5 trillion debt. At some point, we have to rise up and take control of our own situation here.
Would you be willing to nullify something like Common Core?
Yes.
Even if it meant losing Department of Education money?
Yes.
Seriously?
Yes. We're going to save this money when we do entitlement reform anyway.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and just jump to entitlement reform right now. I understand that people talk about, you're going to talk to them for an hour? We've already blown through almost half of this hour. So let's go to entitlement reform. Where does Colorado stand in terms of what we're spending on the social welfare, social safety net?
Well, like I said earlier, Governor Hickenlooper, since he came into office, has expanded spending on entitlements. I call it the expansion of Obamacare by 67%, $800 million.
And isn't that mostly Medicaid?
That's mostly Medicaid. Expansion of every government program to pay for health care.
Which after, when is it? Next year, we actually have to front the money for that.
Yeah, 2 more years. We had a 3-year Cornhusker kickback deal that he also took, which I think is going to cost another $1 billion. We don't have that money.
Right.
It's going to come out of education because it's the only place that's left to cut money out of in Colorado. Probably, cut out the higher ed institutions first and then cut back into K-12. So we can reform this. There's no asset test. I mean, you can actually win the lottery tomorrow and still keep your whole family on every welfare program that's out there. Remember back in 2005 when you could get a mortgage with stated income?
Right.
We call them liar loans.
Right.
You could go in and just say, I make this much money, therefore.
I make X.
Hey, you betcha.
Yeah.
Well, you can sign up for entitlements. There's no asset test. There's really no way to ensure that you're not making more money than you claim to be making. Just bring in a paycheck or take your business and convert it to an LLC and pay yourself out of the LLC $2,500 a month. All of a sudden, you're only making 30 grand a year. You qualify for every program there is.
So how are you going to convince legislators to do that? Because that hickey is unavoidable.
Yeah, and if we have a Republican legislature, again, this will be easy as pie. If we have a Democratic legislature, I'll just show them the math. Say, okay, you guys, you say you love education. Let's save education. We got to reform these entitlement programs. We'll keep a safety net. We just won't let you stay there forever.
You're listening to Greg Brophy on the Michael Brown Show. Greg's one of the candidates running for governor this year. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back, and we're going to talk a little bit about Texas death penalty and immigration. Stay tuned, everybody. It's the Michael Brown Show. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to the Michael Brown Show. We're doing our gubernatorial candidate interviews this week. Greg Brophy, first up in the chair. Greg, welcome back to the show. Glad to have you. Appreciate you doing this. Would you be in favor of repealing the Colorado state income tax and revising or revamping or doing something with property and sales taxes?
Yeah, as long as it wasn't a net tax increase, anything that simplifies our taxes is a good idea. I hate property tax, though. I just despise property
tax. Oh, I do, I do too. But I hate income taxes also.
I know. Well, you're taxing somebody's work, and anytime you tax something, you get less of it.
Right.
So do you want more work or not? If you want more work, less income tax makes sense. But we have this 4.63% income tax, so just lowering it a little bit, I don't think incentivizes. That's on the wrong side of Laffer curve. But if you take it to zero and replace it with something that isn't so punitive against work.
Well, I'm just thinking in terms of being able to compete with Texas or you know, some other states that don't have an income tax.
Yes. Yeah, that's what's happening in the U.S. in this great experiment in democracy that we have. All those southern states, all those red southern states, are lowering taxes and regulatory burden to attract business. Texas is growing; all the jobs in the country are down in Texas, and blue states are getting left behind. So that's a question, Colorado. Do you want to be a red state that's growing, or do you want to be a blue state that's shrinking?
And here's my concern. And look, I'm cynical with all of you guys, so don't take this personally. Right. I'm cynical with all you guys. So it's great that you like the idea of repealing the income tax, and as long as it's revenue neutral or whatever, doing something else. Why don't we ever get anything like that done? Why don't we actually do something that makes us competitive with other states?
It's easier said than done, especially in Colorado, because you could argue that's a change in tax policy that might have a net effect on revenue, which means the people of Colorado would have to approve it through an initiative. And then it gets complicated. So all of the special interests that would be gouged, that's what's so hard about this. If you have 10 special interests that would be gouged by the tax change, and 3 million Coloradans who see a slight improvement, the 10 that are really hurt the most have all the incentive in the world to stop it. And the 3 million that would benefit, you know, microscopically may not have the incentive to understand that side of the equation and vote appropriately.
So then when do we get to the point, and how would you as a leader, if you were elected, then how do you get people to, frankly, start thinking about the people of the state of Colorado and the economy as a whole, as opposed to the special interests that might be concerned about how they might get pinged a little bit?
Well, that's what, you know, Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan both said. You know, first you win the hearts and minds of the people, then you go in and win the vote in the legislature or the parliament. So that's how you have to do it. Well, we can do, I mean, we have a fairly low state tax burden in Colorado anyway. All in, it's fairly low. So if we have a favorable regulatory environment, and the various state departments, the Department of Natural Resources, the Department of Health, which is our state EPA, if we have those guys pushing back against the federal government and helping business get started here in Colorado instead of always hindering it like it has been under Ritter and Hickenlooper, that may be enough to grow our economy a lot anyway.
But if you get elected, I assume that there are enough civil servants buried in all of those regulatory agencies that the most a governor can do can appoint the leadership. And as you and I both know, just appointing a new director of XYZ department doesn't necessarily change how the bureaucracy works. How do you get deeper into the bureaucracy to actually affect change at the where the rubber meets the road with the bureaucrats?
You know, one of the things that happened over the last couple of years is we made a change to our state constitution that allows the governor to appoint deeper down the chain. And I'm going to appoint second and third tier people down the chain who will have marching orders to change the very nature of the bureaucracy that you oversee. We want to encourage people to mine in the mountains and in the western part of Colorado. We want to encourage oil and gas activity. We want to use these agencies to push back against the EPA and the Fish and Wildlife Service instead of say, yes, sir, how many times do you want me to, you know, bash the people of Colorado on your behalf? We got to push back.
In the last gubernatorial election in 2010, John Hickenlooper raised almost $5 million. Let's just round it up to $5 million. What do you think it's going to take to effectively campaign against him as an incumbent? How much money?
You know, the sky is the limit on how much could be spent by outside groups here in Colorado. We saw $30 million spent on each side in the U.S. Senate race that was very close in 2010. We could see that much spent here again. It just depends on what the polls say. You know, if I'm the nominee, I actually think I can beat John Hickenlooper like a drum, have a 10-point lead going into October, which trims back how much money will be spent trying to affect the outcome of the governor's race. The Republican, after we get past the primary, it'll be a lot easier to raise money. The Republican will be able to raise $3.5 million or so. That'll be an adequate amount to raise your name ID. Don't forget, though, too, there's going to be a ton of ballot initiatives that are going to be spending probably tens of millions of dollars a piece. All the TV time and a lot of the radio time will be bought up. It may be hard to even purchase airtime.
Right, but you're still going to need an effective amount of money to be able to campaign against an incumbent governor.
Yes.
Why are you confident you can raise enough money to campaign against an incumbent Democratic governor, considering, as you just said, all of those special interest groups, all of the unions, everybody, and unless he's trailing in the polls by, you know, 10-15%, they're going to drop every barrel of money in the state they can to keep your butt and everybody else's butt out of that gubernatorial, out of that governor's seat.
Yeah, but the tide is in our favor this time. Obama's upside down, something terrible in Colorado. The average unaffiliated voter thinks the Democrats went too far and think that John Hickenlooper needs to be replaced. So we just have to have an adequate amount of money to let them know who I am and why I'm the guy that they can trust to take care of education and transportation and get our economy back.
How much do you think? How much money do you think that is?
3.5 from the candidate and 5 to 10 from outside groups.
So are you on track to do that?
Oh, we're not raising hardly any money in the primary because it's such a crowded field. I think as soon as April 12th is over and we see that there's one person coming out of the assembly, that one person hopefully will be me. I see a path that direction. We'll be able to raise a lot of money because then everybody who's sitting on the sidelines that normally funds Republicans will come into the race heavy.
Let's talk about illegal immigration for a while, because I know that immigration is a federal issue, and I know it's preempted by the federal government, but we've had legislation in Colorado, such as the asset legislation and others. What's your position on illegal aliens in the state of Colorado?
I don't think that illegal aliens or any immigrant should be on any of our welfare programs, and I've always voted that way. I did vote for the asset bill, and that's partly because I just value education so much, and I come to realize that the kids that we're talking about are staying in Colorado the rest of their lives, and those that have an aptitude to go to college will be better off themselves, and the state will be better off if they go to college. And it changes the course of their families forever.
Why are we better off? Why is that fair to someone who is in the same situation in Kansas? Why is it fair to someone who wants to come to the state of Colorado and they have to pay out-of-state tuition? How's it fair, Greg?
Yeah, push back on that one. It's a good one, because there are good arguments against this, but the answer is that the kids that live in Kansas get in-state tuition in Kansas, where
they
live.
But don't you think the University of Colorado is better than the University of Kansas?
Probably.
When they get a better education coming to Colorado?
CSU's better than Kansas.
And I would agree. Actually, you know what? Podunk University is better than University of Kansas. But having said all of that, in all seriousness, I get maybe these kids weren't brought here of their own volition, that they were brought by. But how in the world is it fair for someone, if they're now 18 years old, they can now go through the process to become citizens and then work their way into the system? Why are we giving them any special favor whatsoever?
Well, because they and their families have been living in Colorado and paying taxes in Colorado, just like other poor families in Colorado.
We don't know if they're living under the underground economy. They're not paying any taxes.
Well, and they're most likely poor families. So even if they were living in the and a lot of the
so if they're poor families, they're on the welfare system.
They're paying sales taxes and property taxes. And in many cases, the parents are actually legal residents here. They just didn't take time to get legal residency for the kids. So they're families that are legally residing here, and their kids are going to stay here. And I think the whole state's better off if they get an education. I just believe that much in education. I'm the first person in my family to go to college, and that changes the course of the family, the whole family. Even nieces and nephews are more likely to go to college when they see an uncle or an aunt go to college.
Is there anything in that bill that incentivizes them to stay in Colorado and not go to New Mexico, Wyoming, Kansas, someplace else after we've now given them in-state tuition? What's to keep them from picking up? And let's say they're the ideal, they're the poster child for this bill. And so they get an education at the University of Colorado, and now they get accepted to Princeton or whatever else, and they go off, and we never see them again. How is that fair to the person who has lived here all of their life or has come here and done it the legal way?
They're just kids that have been here their whole lives, too. How is it fair for them to be sitting in the same classroom with every other kid that they're with all the way through from kindergarten to 12th grade? And
so why
classmate can go to college I can't.
So then why pick out the illegal, the child who's here from a parent that's either overstayed their visa, overstayed their green card, or has just come here illegally and they're still here illegally? Why single them out as opposed to anybody else?
Well, that they're the only people that we're talking about that actually graduated from our schools. You know, we have if you're in the military and you come.
What about the poor? No. My point being, what about the poor kid that finally graduates?
from our schools.
From our schools.
They get in-state tuition too.
Right. But why should they now be competing against those who came here illegally?
Well, they're not really competing against them because there's nobody being turned away from the schools if
some of the money
get in.
Some of the money that those poor kids pay goes to pay for that kid to now get an in-state tuition cost.
A little bit. It depends upon the school, and it depends upon how that school is funded. We don't really pay per student. We have the COF, which is sort of per student. But
my point being, their taxes, property taxes, whatever they're paying because they're poor, is now going to subsidize somebody else that did something that wasn't right.
Right. There's good arguments against it. I just think at the end of the day, when you recognize that the kids are staying in Colorado, I think they'll be better off, and the state of Colorado will be better off if they avail themselves of a higher education.
Okay. All right.
That's how much I believe in education.
All right. I just happen to disagree. I just think
it's one of those things, the total package.
Right.
You can agree with me on some things and disagree with me on others, but what you can't say is that I haven't thought about this and that I don't care about education. I don't value education.
I think that's fair. It's the Michael Brown Show. We're going to take a quick break, come back with a few last questions for Greg Brophy. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Michael Brown Show. Glad to have you with me. Greg Brophy in the studio with me. This is the first of the gubernatorial candidates. Tell me quickly your position on the death penalty.
I'm in favor of the death penalty, and I think we should honor what the jury and all of the courts in the land have said with regard to Nathan Dunlap. I would sign that in a heartbeat.
So you're not going to weasel on us when it comes to signing a death sentence?
Yeah, you know, I don't weasel on anything. I go do the right thing almost every time.
There's a question that is on a lot of people's minds that they believe is keeping Republicans from getting elected, and that is the focus on social issues such as abortion, gay marriage, whatever else the social issues encompass. Do you think Republicans focus too much on those? I frankly don't even care what your position is. I'm curious whether you think in terms of electability, it's necessary to campaign on those, to deal with those. What say you?
Well, I think you need to be clear about what your positions are, so I'll do that. I'm pro-life, and I'm a live-and-let-live kind of guy, so I don't really care if two guys live together. It doesn't affect me at all. So very much a live-and-let-live guy. I think marriage is an institution that's beyond the authority of the government. Government can't mess with it. So there's where I stand. I think the media is fascinated with this. I think this election will be settled based on economic issues, based on a vision for education reform in the state of Colorado, based on a guy that has a plan to get our roads built. There's no more studying the I-70 corridor. Let's just go get it fixed. Go get it done like Governor Owens did. I think that's what the election will be settled on, unless you're a person who doesn't know how to talk about these issues and you let the media, the left-stream media, wrangle you into an endless discussion on social issues.
So we've now decriminalized, legalized, however we're going to phrase it, in Colorado, marijuana. Hickenlooper says he wants to spend $45.5 million on youth marijuana use and prevention, $40 million plus on substance abuse, $12 million on public health, $1.8 million on regulatory oversight, $3.2 million law enforcement, yada, yada, yada.
Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. What do you want to do with marijuana revenue?
It's as far as I'm concerned, it's just general fund revenue. I would put some money into youth prevention because that's, I think, our biggest risk on marijuana. We've got to keep it away from our kids. We have to keep it away from our kids. So youth prevention is a good use of that money. The rest of it, as far as I'm concerned, is just general fund money.
Just in general fund and just goes into the big pot, spend
tax.
Whatever. In. Okay.
Yeah.
We got about a couple of minutes left. One question and then the floor is yours. Will you support, of those currently running, yourself, Kopp, Gessler, Tancredo, House, Beaupre, any one of those wins the primary, will you support any one of those?
Yes.
Why should people vote for you?
I am the one guy running who combines the experience of running my own business, mine's a farm, along with the experience of fighting for the things that matter as a citizen legislator to the people of Colorado. I think I have that cross-cultural appeal to actually win the unaffiliated voters, plus the experience that they're looking for in a governor's candidate, what we didn't have in 2010. And to me, this is an exciting election cycle because so many people are running. We have the choice as a party to rebrand ourselves and I think save the country from the extreme fringe of the Democratic Party represented by John Hickenlooper and Morgan Carroll. Are we going to be this new grand opportunity party with fresh faces and new ideas? Are we going to go back to the party of the mid-2000s? the party that got us into this mess that is was roundly dismissed by the voters of the state of Colorado. I think that's what's represented by the likes of Tom Tancredo, Bob Beaupre. And I think instead we go with the guy who is a live and let live semi-libertarian conservative like me, that person that appeals to the young people, the voters that just want liberty, they want opportunity. And stay away from the establishment candidates and go with a guy who can actually appeal to the middle of Colorado while holding the base together because they know they can count on me. That's why I'm running, and you can check me out at gregforgovernor.com.
Senator Brophy, thanks for coming in. It's always good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Give your wife my regards.
I will.
I know she likes the show.
She does.
So she must be a smart woman.
She obviously has one weakness she felt for me.
Right. She has one smart thing going for her. She likes the show, but she married you. Hang on, everybody. The Michael Brown Show continues. Mike Kopp coming up next. Don't go away.